So, today's lesson is, I got a lot of questions and a mystery. And I want to work through it with you all. So if you would, bear with me. But to sum up simply, the mystery is, when you're a control freak and things seem out of control, what do? And that's my mystery. And so to give you a little bit of background, Jeannie and I are both a bit of control freaks. When we first got married, when one or the other of us would drive, we had this coping thing to where we both like to drive. We both want to be in control. And when the other one would drive, one of us would fall asleep. And when we woke up, we'd hope we'd either be our turn to drive or we'd be at our destination. I'd like to have to report we've actually gotten better. We stay awake for longer and longer when the other one's driving. So we're doing better. But in this life, you can't really fall asleep and pretend something isn't happening. We can try, but it doesn't work too well. The bills still come due. The kids won't stop growing. Things keep happening even if we pretend they don't. In life, there's lots of questions. And it's a lot worse than just simply not being in control. You don't even need to answer out loud. But here's some questions. We've all been watching the news, right? Has everybody looked at the news and say, hey, are we actually going to go to war with Iran? If we do go to war, is it going to be a world war? What's going to happen? What happens if we get robbed? What happens if someone bursts through that back door and decides this is the location they want to take their grief out on? What happens if we start the community outreach and we got one of these gangs and we mess with one of the gangs and they don't like us? What happens if the church doesn't grow? And what if we have to close our doors? What if our kids don't learn to love God? And for each of these, there's varying degrees of control. But for all of these questions, there's one thing in common. And it's very simple. I don't know the answer. I don't have the foggiest clue. And Derek thought he was joking when I said the top of my message was, I don't know. It's true. I don't know how any of that was going to play out. I don't think any of us do. Now, I've tried to learn how to predict the future. And I've got a couple predictions right. And I thought, yeah, it's time to go buy some lottery tickets. Woo! But then I've made a few more predictions. And they didn't go so well. So luckily, I didn't buy those lottery tickets. And although I'm keep learning to try to tune that prognostication and polish that crystal ball, till I get tuned in yet, I haven't got it just right yet. So, we've established that I have a lot of questions and no power to predict the future, and I'm feeling real good about myself right now. And you're probably thinking, this guy's got issues. What does this have to do with anything? Well, yesterday we had a congregational all-hands meeting, and I come to realize I'm not the only one that's worried about the future. I'm not the only one who has questions. So what do we do? Well, let's take a look at our instruction book. A good place to start with that is someone who can make pretty much any bad day look good. Let's try to start with Job. He had a whole lot of heavy and pressing questions. Job lost almost everything he had in one day. Messenger after messenger telling him, you lost your kids, you lost your flock, you lost your goods, everything gone. And then he lost his health. He was so messed up that he literally sat there and stared for 7 days. Guy had a lot of problems. And in that time, Job spends a lot of his time wishing either he was never born or that he was dead already. But in between that time, he actually said some pretty smart things. If you would turn me to Job 9, beginning in verse 1, because this is one of the smartest things that Job says. Job 9, starting in verse 1. And this is a little bit of reading. We're going to read about 12 verses here. Job 9, starting in verse 1. And Job answered and said, truly, I know it is so. But how can a man be righteous before God? If one wished to contend with him, he could not answer him one time out of 1,000. God is wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who has hardened himself against him and prospered? He removes the mountains, and they do not know when he overturns them in his anger. He shakes the earth out of its place, and its pillars tremble. He commands the sun, and it does not rise. He seals off the stars. He alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. He made the Bear, Orion, and the Pleiades, and the chambers of the south. He does great things past finding out. Yes, wonders without number. If He goes by, I do not see Him. If He moves past, I cannot perceive Him. If He takes away, who can hinder Him? Who can say to Him, what are you doing? Now, as a brief side note, we'll do a short rabbit trail. Have you ever noticed how Job's saying God's got some pretty good ninja skills? He moves past me and I don't know it. But other than him complimenting God on his crazy good ninja skills, it's interesting what Job is saying here. And if you go down the same chapter, Job 9, verse 32, he sums this up pretty well. In Job 9 and 32, he says this, "For he is not a man as I am, that I may answer him, and that we should go to court together." For all that Job was going on, all his sufferings, all of his issues and his weighty questions, he kept sight that God is God. He's not a human. And for all that was going on in Job's life, how little control he had, which is also known of absolutely none at all, he could have forgotten who God was. He could have blamed him. He could have forgotten about God and thought that he was all alone in these things. But he didn't. He remembered that God is higher and that we are, he's higher than we are and he's unknowable by us. God is truly mighty and we, unfortunately, are not. But in times of trouble, how does knowing that God is unknowable help us? And for that, let's turn to Esther. Now, Esther's story is a really interesting one. Have you ever noticed that in Esther, the name God, Lord, Yahweh, never comes up? But I'd posit that he's throughout the whole thing. In Esther, Esther's a Jew. She becomes queen of Persia. And during her time as queen, a guy named Haman decides to wipe out all the Jews. Esther and all her people are in line to be wiped out, savagely murdered. Old, young, male, female, every one of them. And beyond this, she's got a paranoid king to deal with. If she goes in front of this king, he's so paranoid that if she doesn't recognize him, the rule of law is even if she's queen, she dies. So everybody she knows, everybody she loves, everybody in her family is sentenced to death. And she can't even tell the king about it because if she's not there at the right time, he's not in a good mood, she's dead. Her uncle Mordecai gave her some great advice. Turn to Esther 4 with me. Esther 4, 13 through 14. In Esther 4, again in verse 13, it says, "And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, 'Do not think in your heart that you will escape from the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet, who knows whether you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this?'" Now, if this was a Hollywood movie, Mordecai would have said something like, "Esther, it's all on you. Don't let any of us down." Esther would have gone, had a nervous breakdown, basically just melted down in a puddle, and then got up, learned combat skills, how to travel at the speed of light, and it saved everybody in all weekend. That's how Hollywood works, right? It's a really cool movie. But in real life, Esther, if Mordecai had actually told her that, Esther would have just stopped at the meltdown like a puddle and been done. We'd never have the story. Wouldn't even last the years because they'd all be gone. So in Mordecai's words, there's something that's pretty magic there. And it's I call it a magic pressure relief valve. And if we pair it with what Job said, it's pretty cool. Back in 14, it says, "For if you remain completely silent this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place." The magic in that verse is, it wasn't all Esther. It wasn't all Esther at all. It was Esther's choice whether she'd be part of the solution. But she herself was not the solution. God was the solution. And bearing this is what Job said of God being truly mighty and higher than we are, that means that God doesn't need to learn combat skills or light speed travel in a weekend. He has that power. He has real, true, awesome power. The one who has that true power is the solution. We simply get to decide whether we're going to be part of that solution or not. Now, in some sense, this kind of seems like we're helpless, right? How we need to look at the big picture. Could Esther actually learn those combat skills and light travel speed in that one weekend to save all of her people? No. Rambo couldn't do it. Esther couldn't do it. Can we stop our lovely government from deciding to go to war with Iran with something that bubbles up over the weekend? No. Can we ourselves change another person's heart and get them to accept God and love God because we will them to do it? No, that's not us at all. We stand about as much chance as Esther did, learn those combat skills, or Job with a verse in his fortunes. But we do have a choice. And this is the same as Esther's. Do we go it alone or do we work with God? We have a God who is high, who is unknowable, who is truly mighty. But for whatever reason, He actually loves us. Now, that's a pretty nice thing. So let's turn to Romans 8, one of my favorite passages. Romans 8, beginning verse 14. We'll read a little bit here from Romans. Romans 8, beginning verse 14. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. For you do not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you receive the spirit of adoption, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with Him, that we may also be glorified together. And that's a real fancy way of saying we're God's kids, which is a really nice thing. Let's skip down to verse 31. In verse 31, this kind of goes one of those, we're talking about movies, you got the troughs where you go up and down. And this has got one of those troughs where you go up and down. But Romans 8, verse 31. What shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare His own Son, but delivered Him up for us all, how shall He not with Him also freely give us all things? Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. Who is he who condemns? It is Christ who died, and furthermore is also risen, who is even at the right hand of God, who also makes intercessions for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? As it is written, for your sake we are killed all day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus, our Lord. I love Romans 8. And that part right there where it takes you from who's against us to we're going to be killed all day to no one's going to separate us from the love of God. It's a roller coaster. But it's a really good one, right? Because if you notice, even on that roller coaster, even on those ups and downs, it's still an up. Even when you're being slaughtered and murdered and tortured and naked and peril, all that, it still comes back to even all that doesn't separate us from God and His love. With Job and all that he went through, all that he faced, all that he's going through, he remembered that. He knew that God is still there. And no matter what we're facing, God is always greater. And that's some pretty serious ammo for our clip, right? We know the stories of Job and Esther. And we know their happy endings because of God. What about our lives, the here and now? When I worry about things, I admit, there's times when you lose sight of things and you think this is all on me. I got to be the one to figure out the way. I got to be the one to fix things. Those times I realized I was really stupid. That's not really the way it's supposed to be. It is never me that will fix those things. It is never me that's going to fix those issues that are bigger than I am. When I remember to look at God and I look to Him, He's never failed. Now, I also admit, there's been periods of time I was like Job. It's like, okay, God, are you coming yet? Is it time yet? But as long as you never forget that He's coming and never lose patience, it always works out. I've learned that, like with any good parent, God let us step out on our own, see how far we'll make it, and instead of swooping in before we actually learn the lessons that are there for us. We will get scrapes, we will get bruises, even some scars living this life. But God always makes sure that things always work out for good. We learn patience. We learn trust. We get stronger when God is our parent. As I've gotten older and been through more and more, I've seen God come through time and time. You learn that lesson. You learn that those times they never are really fun, but they do always turn out for good. And you learn trust in God. So, how does a control freak learn to deal with situations that seem out of control and you have no clue about the answer? We learn that God really is the one behind the wheel. And we learn to work with Him. I don't know what's going to happen. But as hard as that is, and as much as I don't like that, it's okay. Because God does know. And He loves us. A long time ago, there was this guy named Polycarp. And other than having a funny name, he had this saying that I thought was really cool. Polycarp's situation was, he was basically in the time of Rome. And he was basically, the Caesar decided everybody's going to worship him. So he came to him and said, bow down to me, renounce God, and worship me. And Polycarp had this really cool quote. It says, 86 years I've served Christ, and He never did me any wrong. How can I blaspheme my King who saved me? And you know, when I get to the end of my days, I don't want to be burned to the stake, but I want to be able to say just like He did. That's a pretty cool confidence to have in your life, that you've got God, He's always there for you. No matter what happens to us, no matter how great the issue, God is greater, and He will not do us wrong. We may be struggling as a church right now, but God is greater than our struggles. What happens to us, this place, this nation, this world, it's in His hands. We simply need to make the choice like Esther. Do we trust Him? Do we actively serve Him? And do we let Him work through us? If so, then all will work out for good, no matter what comes our way. Then that's my lesson for tonight. Fairly short and fairly quick. And if you haven't accepted God, made the choice to serve Him, now's as good as any time to start to do so. If you'd like to be baptized and become one of God's kids, or if you had any need that we can help you with, please come forward as we stand and we sing.